practice as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings, this is the Automatically Deleted Husband, and it's Friday, and I've had basically 12 hours in front of the computer, and I'm tired for some reason. I don't know why that's happening. I have, you know, there is this idea of taking one day out of the week to rest, and, you know, it's common within the Protestant community to do that on Sundays. There's a group, and a lot of them right here in Cleveland, who tend to do Saturday. You know, the various versions of Hebrew roots or things of that nature. And I don't subscribe to that. But of late, I actually have been doing Saturday instead of Sunday because I'm finding, because the important thing for me in that day of rest is not to simply sit here and put my feet up, but to engage with people. And I've been having more opportunities to invest time in people on Saturdays. So, you know, and, you know, instead of gathering at an institutional church for an hour and then saying nice things and polite things and go away, I invest hours with people. And, you know, sometimes it's deep theology. Sometimes it's just simply being there to listen to them. You know, I would suggest that's vital. But so I'm, you know, finishing off day six and I'm exhausted. But we had a delightful dialogue today, and I'd like to share it with you again because I want to encourage others, especially my kids. There are things that are popularly said within the Christian community, but the way it's said and the connotation and the reality of what the Scripture says are often two different things. You know, and there are things, because I've been caught in it, more than once. I won't want to tell you how many times, but I've been caught in more than once because you get to the idea of, well, this is what the community is saying, therefore this must be true, and it's not. And it's just simply look. But in our dialogue today, you know, we started with because it was actually the next chapter, but we started with Proverbs 28. Because there's a verse in there, the ESV, the wicked flee when no one pursues, but the righteous are as bold as a lion, or the LSV. The wicked have fled, and there is no pursuer, and the righteous is confident as a young lion. And, you know, I find this interesting because the wicked flee and the wicked have fled. One is present tense, one is past tense. And I wonder about that. I don't have an answer. I haven't studied that in detail, but I do wonder about that because there's a difference in the meaning of something when it's present tense or past tense. So, but it's something I've noticed, but I don't have a good answer, and I just want to point out that it's there. But then there's the next verse. When a land transgresses, it has many rulers, but with a man of understanding and knowledge, its stability will long continue. Or the LSV, by the transgression of a land, its heads are many, and by an understanding man who knows right, it is prolonged. Now, what you frequently hear from this context is when you have good rulers, things go well. When you have bad rulers or wicked rulers, things go poorly. That's the connotation. That is what's often said. That's not what it says. Just look at it. That's not what it says. You have to read it in, and it's easy to read in, but that's not what it says. And I think this is important. You know, so when a land transgresses, it has many rulers, or by the transgressions of a land, its heads are many. In other words, the land transgresses. So, you know, and I don't know. I don't have it in front of me, and I should have. I have failed as a human being yet again. But, you know, I don't know why it says the land, you know, by the transgression of a land, because you know, okay, in the Hebrew, there is the word that is the land, which means the earth, a piece of ground, the inhabitants of the land, or the people of the land. So, okay, that's what I would suspect. So just assuming that that is indeed correct. So when a land transgresses, we're not talking about the dirt. We're talking about the people of a particular area, a community, a country, a region, whatever. So when the land transgresses, it has many rulers. In other words, they have a lot, you know, again, there's a difference between a ruler and a leader. The leader, the archon, is a more exclusive, more a broader term because it means to lead or rule. But the idea of a lead is I will set the model, follow me. You see this in what's his name in the book of Judges. You know. Anyway, there are numerous examples of follow me. Kind of thing versus I command you to do this. That's a ruler. So there's a difference between giving a command and setting a model. The difference between ruling and leading. And you have many rulers. In other words, you have a lot of people telling you what to do. When the land when the people have a lot of transgressions, you're going to have a lot of rulers. So the fact that you have a lot of rulers is not the result of the bad rulers, is the result of the people and their transgressions. But then it goes on, but with a man of understanding and knowledge, its stability will long continue, or by an understanding man who knows right, it is prolonged. It is not saying, and there is no words in there that say this, it is frequently thought that way, but it doesn't say that. A man of understanding is not a man of understanding who is ruling or leading. That's not in the words at all. And a man of understanding, and by a man understanding, who knows right, it is prolonged. You know, the many heads or the many rulers is because of the transgressions of the people. But when you have a man, or I would suggest you could put a connotation when there are one or more that are setting the model of a righteous man, and others follow suit. But when you, I think it's culturally within that community, you have righteous men. There's no need for the heads. Or the rulers. And I would suggest the Lord will keep the rulers away. You know, it's fascinating because in the book of Judges, in those days there was no king in Israel, and every man did what was right in his own eyes. And there is a similar context in Deuteronomy, I think it is. But again, you have to look at it in context, because I would suggest in the context of the book of Judges, because again, the book of Judges is known as one of the most peaceful periods of history. There are the moments, and what are those moments that come when things go bad because the people turned from the Lord? But normally when things were peaceful, every man did what was right in his own eyes. Not that he was a judge and doing whatever he felt was, you know, I can get away with wickedness. But if I do what is right in my eyes, in other words, I will try to perceive what is right by the Lord's command, and I will do that. I don't need an authority to tell me. My authority is Christ. And I would suggest that's the meaning of that. And I would suggest that would make the whole thing consistent. And again, I think it's very important to look for consistent thoughts, not to try to find something here and make a completely different context somewhere else. Because again, the Bible is consistent. So the point, Proverbs 28, the verse 2, by the transgression of a land, its heads are many. In other words, there are multiple rulers. In other words, the people are not free. But what we started with is actually Proverbs 29. He who is often reproved, yes, stiffens his neck, will suddenly be broken beyond healing. Well, that's unfortunate. When the righteous increase, the people rejoice, but when the wicked rule, the people groan. So it's interesting, verse 2 in both 28 and 29 is the verse in question. You know, the LSV, a man often reproved, hardening the neck, is suddenly broken and there was no healing. In other words, you can't correct me. I don't care how many times you try to fix things. You can't correct me. And then is suddenly broken and there's no healing. You know, it's kind of like, oh, well, if I have this arrogant attitude and I get broken, there's no healing. Or broken beyond healing. It's kind of like, so again, there is this call for humbleness. You know, there has been an occasion once or twice where I have been mistaken. And, you know, it's the idea, Lord, correct me not in your wrath. In other words, I want to be ready to accept the correction of the Lord quickly before the Lord has to get angry at me and cause me grief in order to be corrected. Or be to the point where is suddenly broken and there's no healing. I don't want to get to that point at all. But verse 2, when the righteous increase, the people rejoice, but when the wicked rule, the people groan. Again, it is not when the righteous rulers increase. The rulers isn't in there. But when the righteous increase, or in the multiplying of righteous, the people rejoice. In other words, when the community is full of righteous people, not that you have righteous leaders to keep the community at bay, not at all. It's when the community is righteous, the people rejoice. We live not in a community, an area or a country, that the joy is we have a dominating rulers that keep us in line. Not at all. It's we live in a community where the people voluntarily, on their own initiative, by the grace of God, want to live a righteous life. Then the people rejoice. But when the wicked rule, the people groan. You need rulers when the people go astray. And when the people who rule have gone astray, the people groan. Can you find rulers who haven't gone astray? Good luck. You know, and I this was a fascinating dialogue. You know, and you know, well, because the obvious thing is people will turn to the Romans 13, because Romans 13 is the reason for the government, and the government is the regard. No, it isn't. That's not what it says. You know, especially for the ruling are not a terror to the good works, but to the evil. Do you wish not to be afraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from it. For he is a servant of God for your good, and. And but anyway, you look at that context, you say, oh, good. I'm going to, you know, I want to submit to my rulers and, of course, vote in the right rulers, right? Because the Proverbs say, if I put the right rulers in place, I'm going to rejoice. But that's not what the Proverbs says. So then the question comes in, what is for the ruling are not a terror to those of good works? Can you point to any time in history where you had righteous rulers? Again, even King David was a slave driver. He sent people off to wars that may not have been appropriate. And obviously he was an adulterer and all sorts of things. So, but the difference between him and, of course, Solomon, or especially Saul, is he clearly understood the Lord's grace. But so when you look at this, the ruler not a terror to the good works, but to the evil, governments kill more people, basically, than criminals, because governments are criminal. I mean, if you look in the U.S. or basically any other country, one of the biggest killers is the government. So how does this work with Romans 13? It basically, the idea that you want good rulers, so no, I'm sorry. That's I don't have a I need a more concise way to address Romans 13, but clearly the only righteous ruler. You know, and again, because I've heard it again recently, there is the idea. Who said it anyway? Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Well, yes, power does corrupt to a man. Absolute power does not corrupt absolutely, because there's only one person who has absolute power, and that is the Lord himself, and he is not corrupted. So, you know, the wisdom of man and the wisdom of God are different. So, but yes, power tends to corrupt. That's the actual expression. Power tends to corrupt. And yes, if I have power over you, if I can rule you, then I can slip into, you know, this is my benefit if I rule you in this particular way, because I can get something, my pride, power, personal wealth, whatnot, and things of that nature. Anyway, the important thing is when you hear a proverb or a mention of something in the Bible, and you have then this debate, this summary statement, check it, because the summary statement may or may not be correct. You know, I make my summary statement. Marriage begins with sex, ends with death. And I check it constantly. And thus far, I haven't found any weakness. And I'm willing to engage anybody on that. The idea that we want to vote in the right people in order to have, you know, for righteousness to increase, that's not what the Proverbs say. So, you know, and because you, if you have to put in rulers, the rulers are men, sinful men, and they're there because the land has transgressed. Anyway, I found this was delightful. This really was delightful, and I suggest Proverbs 28 and 29, the second verse in both, is a worthy study. Check and see if what I say is true. You know, I spent all day. Actually, I spent basically all week. On you know, there are many things on Shofar Nexus that were put off literally for years. And some things, I said, okay, now I got to get this done because I'm going to be able to show it. And one is, one involves when a packet of data comes in to be processed on the computer, how is it handled? And one of the things that Shofar Nexus has is extensive logging. And it's important to make sure that logging is quick, because I don't want to spend most of my time logging. I want to spend most of my time, or the processor's time, doing actual real work. And so it's been a very difficult balance. And I've done a couple things that has radically increased performance, because it's cut down the amount of time it takes to log. Plus, I've made the logging much clearer. So when a packet comes in, I used to have some quirkiness in the way, because it wasn't really, you didn't see it in order. Now you're seeing an order. And the next thing is to do it as the packets go out. But since I got the framework in place, hopefully that'll go quickly. But, you know, and the important thing is it's simple. It allows me to convey to somebody, I can look at it and say, I see what it is doing. And that's vital, because I'm not trying to do something behind the scenes. I'm trying to develop something that I can hand to somebody, and somebody, especially Somebody who's a novice can see what's happening. Somebody with some in-depth knowledge can see all the more what's happening and know with more confidence that they're not being fooled, or they can see if somebody's trying to mess with them. That is the vital point. Because this is a serious game. Anyway. But when the wicked rule, would be my title for today. I think this is important. My wife once quoted the Galatians 5, "For freedom's sake, Christ has set us free." She misused it because it's not freedom from marriage. But the other thing is, it's continuation of Galatians 4, when we are submitting yourself again to a yoke of slavery, the institution, religious institution specifically. It's also consistent with the idea that I continue to point out. We want to promote freedom and democracy, but they're opposites. Freedom and democracy are opposites, because in a democracy, the minority is not free. It's that simple. The minority is not free. If I'm in a democracy and I want to do something that the majority doesn't want, I do not have that freedom. I do not have the freedom to say no. So I want freedom, not democracy. And that's why I would suggest you hear the Lord say, being obedient to Him is the truest form of freedom. Anyway, I had a busy week. I'm tired. I hope to have at least a modest hike tomorrow to see a few people. And maybe tomorrow, hopefully tomorrow, not Sunday, because Sunday's supposed to be cooler. But there may be a hike with Chris. If not, I still plan to have a hike. But hikes are important, a vital part of life. Hikes in the woods are great. And there are some other things, but I don't have everything put together yet. And I'm tired. My lady, my wife, the woman I love and adore. I say that over and over again, because I mean it. I haven't turned from you. I love you and I want you back.